This is Don Hollenbeck, CBS News headquarters at Cub Run on the Warrenton Turnpike, 30 miles southwest of Washington. On this 21st of July, 1861, federal artillery has just stopped shelling the Confederate positions across Bull Run, the small river 2 miles in front of us, and the long-awaited federal infantry attack is expected to begin at any moment. This will be the first major engagement between the untested armies of North and South. General Irvin McDowell's Federal Army of Northeastern Virginia outnumbers General Pierre Beauregard's Confederate Army of the Potomac almost 2-1. The federal commander expects a quick, decisive victory, and he's certain he'll be in Richmond, the new Confederate capital, 100 miles away by tomorrow night at the latest. Here in Union headquarters, officers are making bets with one another over whose regiment will be the first to march into Richmond.
July 21st, 1861, Cub Run in Virginia. You are there.
The Army of the North, powerful, supremely confident, prepares to march on Richmond and end overnight the six-month-old uprising of the South. CBS takes you back 87 years to the first battle of Bull Run near Manassas Junction. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there...
You are there.
You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyon, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now...
CBS News headquarters, 2 miles behind the Bull Run battle line, and Don Hollenbeck.
Additional details seem to be set, and now with a sudden ceasefire of the artillery, the federal infantry action is about to begin. General McDowell and his staff officers have waited eagerly for this moment. It's almost 3 months since the South walked out of the Union and fired on Fort Sumter. There have been the two minor skirmishes at Rich Mountain and Big Bethel, but nothing more, while both South and North mobilized their forces. And now, finally, General McDowell's army has marched out of Washington, crossed the Potomac into Virginia here for a showdown battle with the Confederates. 3 days ago, the maneuvering started. And at 6 o'clock this morning, federal guns opened up along a six-mile front on the hidden Confederate positions in the thick woods across Bull Run. So far, the Confederates have chosen not to return the fire. They've shown no signs of activity, but the Federals know they're there. There have been reports of Confederate reinforcements coming from General Johnson's army at Winchester, Virginia, but the Federals don't take those reports very seriously. They think the South can't possibly stop the Northern march on Richmond. And this confidence in a quick victory isn't limited to the Federal Army, either. All morning long, hundreds of civilians, men and women, have been streaming out here to Cub Run from Washington to witness what they think and hope will be the end of the Confederacy. No one expected that there'd be a civilian audience at this battle. It's the first time that we can recall in history that there has been such an audience. John Daly's out there among them now, not far from these headquarters, so go ahead, John Daly.
There are about 1,000 spectators jamming this turnpike and overflowing the meadows, sloping down to Bull Run 2 miles below. They're gathered here like spectators at a country race in their carriages and gigs and wagons. A brass band has come out from Washington, and it's livening things up with popular tunes while the crowd waits for some action. I've talked to dozens of the people here, and the crowd seems to be a cross-section of just about everybody in Washington. There are clerks, butchers, schoolboys. There are ladies in the latest Finland fashions holding tiny parasols over their heads to shield their delicate complexions from the hot sun. And there are many distinguished members of Congress here. Congressman Ely of New York.
Keep your eyes on the boys from the Empire State today.
That was the congressman himself. We'll be talking to him in just a moment.
And the boys from old New York.
Senators Wade and Chandler. And to my left, Senators Grimes, Wilson, and McDougal. Most of them are carrying spy glasses, rifles, and revolvers, not to mention the rich lunches, bottles of wines, and flasks of Monongahela and bourbon stowed away in their comfortable carriages. Earlier this morning, the federal commander, General McDowell, dashed by in his carriage and received a staring ovation as he rode up to the front. The distinguished senators and congressmen are striding bravely after dignity on this hot, sultry day. It's over 100 degrees already. They're trying hard to ignore their wilted collars and dusty beards. Well, the band has finally given their horns a rest. The ladies and gentlemen are applauding graciously, and perhaps now we can have a word with Congressman Ely. Congressman,
Yes, sir.
Are you expecting to follow the troops to Richmond, sir?
John, I'll bet you I'll be the first one there. You know how much I paid to bring my carriage out here today? $1,000. With that spavined ringbone bay. Yes, sir. You know what the livery man said to me?
No. What did he say?
He said to me, Congressman Ely, he said, take it or leave it. $1,000 is cheap. He said, don't forget that you paid more than that to see Jenny Lind on her first night in Washington. And this here battle, he said, ain't going to be repeated. Ain't going to be repeated. That's what he said, and he's right, too.
But, Mr. Congressman, seriously speaking, do you think the North is justified in its confidence in a quick and easy victory?
Well, it's going to be quick, but it's not going to be easy. We must never forget that many of our brave boys in blue will never come home again. Even the boys of my own 13th Rochester. But the eyes of the nation are on Bull Run today. The crowd is forward to Richmond. The rebel Congress must not be allowed to meet there tomorrow or ever.
But Congressman, it's been said that the federal troops are green. They're all 90-day volunteers, and they've had no combat training.
Well, what about the Confederates? They haven't had any more time to get ready for this battle than we have. And we've got a trained army, the biggest and most powerful this continent has ever seen. 35,000 men.
Yes, sir, but the Southern papers have been boasting that...
Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know what you're going to say. But I want to say that the North has been ridiculed, taunted, and insulted. Every day we've been reminded that one Southerner can lick 5 Yankees, nay, 10 Yankees. Well, I say, let us put the question to a test on the battlefield now. The time has come to challenge the rebel boat. On to Richmond. See you in Richmond, John.
Thank you. Thank you, Congressman Ely. And now, here is a young lady in yellow skirt wearing a red, well, I guess you call it wearing a red parasol. She's sipping on a glass of champagne.
A toast, Mr. Daly. A toast to the Union. On to Richmond.
Are you planning on going to Richmond, too?
I wouldn't think of being left behind. It's so exciting. So fascinating.
Excuse me, miss. Huge clouds of dust have suddenly risen over the hills 2 or 3 miles in front of us to the right, far beyond Stone Bridge, the right flank of the federal line. We can't tell what's causing those dust clouds. They may be thrown up by a large body of marching men or by the head-on crash of troops. And the crowd here thinks that the battle has begun. They're cheering, waving handkerchiefs and flags. There goes the band again. Just listen to that rejoicing.
The Battle of Bull Run has been joined, and CBS is now at liberty to report something we knew last night, namely that the federal attack would not come along the main battle line, but rather it would be a surprise movement around the federal right flank. The attack is being launched under the joint divisional command of Generals Hunter and Heintzelman. Ken Roberts has been with them under secret orders, and now that the action has begun, he should be ready to report soon, but so far we've not been able to make contact with him. Ned Calmer's at Stonebridge, the right anchor of the federal line, 2 miles in front of us. The action will be closer to him, so we switch to Ned Calmer at Stonebridge.
The action is going on at a place called Matthews Hill across Bull Run River, about a mile up from here on my right. Shells are exploding against the sky up there. There are clouds of smoke and dust, occasional flashes of musket fire, the gleam of bayonets, and the woods are rolling with the roar of cannon. I can't see any troops from here, but I can surmise what happened. The Northern divisions under Generals Hunter and Heintzelman probably surprised the Confederate outposts up at this end of the 6-mile battle line. The fact that the federal attack would be launched in this area seems to have been a very well-kept secret. There's been no movement of Confederate troops across from us that we can see. The Confederate outposts must be resisting fiercely. So far, they seem to be holding. It's their intention, no doubt, to gain time for Southern reinforcements to be rushed up here. Sounds like the big guns have slackened, so we can't tell here whether they're Confederate guns or Federal. Perhaps we'll know something and just...
This is Don Hollenbeck at CBS headquarters, Cub Run. We've interrupted Ned Calmer at Stonebridge because we've just received a communication from Federal Army headquarters. That communication reports that Confederate outposts are abandoning their positions on Matthews Hill and are in full retreat. The Confederate retreat seems to be disorganized. It has all the appearances of a rout, and the Southerners are said to be headed across the Warrenton Turnpike. There's another big hill on the other side of that turnpike. Our maps identify it as the Henry House Hill. It rises roughly across from the right flank of the Federal line at Stone Bridge. There must be more Confederate brigades up there. Here's another bulletin. Federal batteries on Matthews Hill are laying down a barrage on the retreating Confederates. The Rhode Island Infantry under Colonel Ambrose Burnside were the heroes of that first rush. Those men are veterans now. Another bulletin. Federal infantry on Matthews Hill is moving forward against the Confederates' left flank on Henry House Hill. General McDowell, commander-in-chief of the federal forces, is leading the advance personally. We still haven't been able to reach Ken Roberts. He's probably moving up with the federal army for the major attack against the Confederate left flank. But outside our news headquarters here at Cub Run, the northern spectators are already celebrating just as if the battle were already over. So we're going to switch you to John Daly out there among them.
The massive spectators here are wild with excitement over the success of the Northern Army. The cry is, on to Richmond, and the whole tide of men, women, horses, and carriages, gigs, wagons, is preparing now to move down to Stone Bridge to line up for this 90-mile ride to the Confederate capital. These exultant Northerners would have been dashing to Stone Bridge now if they hadn't been stopped by federal officers. The officers stated emphatically that General McDowell could not be responsible for the safety of civilians until the battle was over. But that didn't stop this crowd. They wanted to push on, and the officers had to throw up a roadblock finally to stop them. Some federal cavalrymen are galloping up the turnpike from the front, and they've got a prisoner with them, a Confederate prisoner, the first one that we've seen in the battle. The crowd has caught sight of him, and they're choking the road. The band has stopped playing. The cavalrymen have stopped, and they're trying to get through. I'm going to see if I can get over there. Let me through here, please. Coming through. Out of my way. Coming through, please. I'm up now as close to the federal cavalryman as I can get. Oh, Captain! Captain! There he is! Captain! Captain! No use. I can't get the captain's attention. His horse is rearing up. Confederate prisoner good-naturedly. These northern spectators are magnanimous in their feeling of victory. The blonde Confederate boy, and he really is only a boy, is ignoring them. He's holding the reins of his horse, looking straight ahead. Where are you taking this prisoner, Captain?
Interrogation.
And how's the battle going?
We're whipping them. We'll be in Richmond tomorrow night. Come on, let's go.
The cavalry officers have galloped off with the prisoner in the direction of Federal Army headquarters. The crowd is laughing, waving after the prisoner. Some of these Northerners are lifting their champagne glasses, and now the band has started up again. And the crowd is cheering wildly, men slapping each other on the...
This is Don Hollenbeck inside CBS News headquarters. We've interrupted John Daly. General Tyler's federal division has crossed Stone Bridge and has joined up with the main federal spearhead at the foot of Henry House Hill on the Confederate left flank. Those two federal units number about 20,000 men. Ken Roberts is with them. He's been waiting at the foot of the hill for the end of the federal artillery bombardment, and that bombardment is now over. The all-out federal assault is about to begin, so we take you to Ken Roberts.
I'm crouched in the tall grass at the foot of Henry House Hill. The 69th New York Irish have been chosen to lead the federal attack up the hill. The men are on their knees in the tall grass, praying before they go into action. Their regimental chaplain, Father O'Reilly, is leading them. This is a solemn, inspiring moment. Long lines of brave troops praying on scarlet knees in green grass, their bayonets glittering in the sun like spears over their bowed heads. Three huge banners wave above them. One is green, a gift, I'm told, of Miss Laura Keene, the celebrated actress. Another is brilliant red, presented to the 69th by Mrs. John Jacob Astor. And the third flag, the Stars and Stripes, waving gently over these bowed heads as the Latin words of Father O'Reilly commend every soul to God. Now Father O'Reilly has finished, the benediction is over, and the men are rising in the tall grass, putting on their red caps. The men are silent. No one is speaking. Oh, here comes a body of horsemen galloping down the federal line, led by an officer who makes a dashing figure. The men have recognized him. It's Colonel Sherman, their red-headed brigade leader. He's reined up here in front of the 69th. There's a sort of a half-grin on his narrow face, his blue eyes sweeping the ranks. Colonel Sherman has drawn his sword. His half-grin has broken into a smile. He's jerked his horse back on its haunches.
Come on, boys! You got your chance at last! Come on, boys!
the hill. The men of the 69th are shouting for Ireland and Fontenoy, their old world battle cry. The whole line has risen up out of the tall grass. The 69th is moving up Henry's Hill in charge formation. Three lines, 10 feet apart, common time. It's got about 450 yards to go. The men in their red fezzes, blue jackets, red pantaloons, and white gaiters, every man in step, every man born in Ireland. Now they're chanting as they march, arms at right shoulder. Not a shot fired yet by the Confederates at the top of the hill. They're waiting for the Federals to come closer. It's difficult to report one's feelings as you watch this charge. It's thrilling, awe-inspiring, and yet terrible and tragic. For in a moment, those Confederate batteries up there at the top of the hill will open fire. The 69th is still marching. They've gone almost 50 yards, but the Confederate artillery has opened up. Men of the 69th are falling. It's canister the Confederates are firing. Canister. And I think more men are falling. And there goes a Federal officer off his horse. And another officer. But the Federal Sherman is still mounted. Yes, he's still mounted. Still leading. The Federal line hasn't fired. I suppose they're waiting to get up real close so their volleys will have real effect. Now they've brought their muskets down. They fired the first Federal volley. The 69th is broken into a charge. They're charging with cold steel. The Confederate infantry has opened up from somewhere up there around the Henry House. It's hard to tell just where they are. The dust smoke is rolling over the hill in great clouds, but I can still see the red and blue masses of the 69th, the fighting 69th now. Muskets flashing fiercely through the yellow cloud. They're almost at the top of the hill, and I don't know, the Confederate fire is still heavy, still taking great toll. The men of the 69th keep going. Now they've reached the top. They're fighting hand to hand with the Confederates. A confused mass of men, gunfire, and smoke. It's impossible to tell from here how the battle is going. The 69th has stormed the hill. Take it to Henry House. That warning hail is coming from the throats of the victorious Federals. I can see them waving their caps. The Federals are sending up their two crack artillery units now. The batteries of Captain Pickett and Captain Griffin. They're rumbling right past me. Horses and men pulling 16 big guns and ammunition. They're going up that hill to complete the rout of the Confederates. I'm going to move up with them to the top of the hill. This is Ken Roberts, our junior to CBS News headquarters at Cub Run.
This is Don Hollenbeck. General McDowell has just telegraphed the victory news to President Lincoln and General Winfield Scott at the War Department. The northern spectators outside our news headquarters here at Cub Run are beginning to move towards Stone Bridge. There they'll line up for the 100-mile ride to Richmond. We're going to move down with them. John Daly outside is already underway with the crowd, so over to John Daly.
Moving down along the Warrenton Turnpike, the carriages and gigs are moving in orderly procession, with the spectators marching behind. The band, as you can hear, is playing Columbia, the Gem of the Ocean. This has turned into a victory parade. We'll let you hear the sound of these rejoicing Northerners celebrating the end of the war. And billowing clouds of yellow smoke. Wait a minute. The guns have suddenly ceased firing. Almost as suddenly as they began. We don't know what this means unless the Federal batteries have already completed their task and...
Here's a bulletin. The battle is not over. A Confederate regiment identified as the 33rd Virginia has just charged and silenced the 16-gun federal batteries of Ricketts and Griffin on Henry House Hill. Every federal cannoneer was cut down by the Confederate volley. The Confederates made a quick counterattack after they were driven off the plateau. For the first time, the issue appears in doubt. We don't know what's going on up there. We've been unable to reach Ken Roberts at Henry House Hill. Perhaps Ned Calmer at Stonebridge has some information. Go ahead, Ned Calmer.
I can't see a thing but the forest up there in the direction of Henry House Hill. That's about a mile or so in front of me. But I can hear the sounds of muskets. There must be thousands of them blazing up there. It's impossible to identify them, but it certainly sounds like a terrific fight going on up there. The officers here with me are the...
This is Don Hollenbeck at Cub Run again. We've interrupted Ned Calmer. Ken Roberts is calling in from Henry House Hill. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
I'm on the front porch of the Henry House with a clear view of the battlefield. The federal infantry is counterattacking the Confederates who charged and silenced the federal guns. The Federals have counterattacked and been driven back before. This house has changed hands many times. The objective both sides are struggling for are those 16 federal guns in the middle of the plateau. Whoever has those guns will win this battle. The federal infantry is moving away from me toward the Confederate line on the double, firing as they go. Through the smoke and fire, I can see the battle flag of the 2nd Vermont, the 5th and 11th Massachusetts, the 1st Minnesota, and Michigan. I can't see the Confederates. They're crouched on the edge of the plateau. The Federals are about 20 yards away from that edge. The men in their red and blue uniforms. That was a Confederate volley. The men in gray have risen and fired point blank in the very face of the Federals. Men are stumbling, falling. The Federal line is hesitating. The battle seems to be on thin edge of decision. It's impossible to say. The Federals are giving ground. They're backing away. The Confederates are charging forward now. They're shrieking. A long, high yell. They're yelling like demons. That yell has a chilling effect. I've never heard anything like it before. I think I can make out the Confederate blood-red battle flags now. The 2nd, the 4th, Virginia. That's it, Virginia. And the 5th, Virginia. This seems to be all Virginia. They're coming straight ahead. The Federals are breaking. They're running towards this house. They're abandoning those guns again. Federal officers are trying to rally their men, but they won't listen. They seem to be terrified by those charging shots of Confederates.
This is Don Hollenbeck at Cub Run. We've lost contact with Ken Roberts on Henry House Hill, so we'll try to switch to Ned Calmer at Stonebridge, a mile behind him. Go ahead, Ned Calmer.
The sound of battle has suddenly stopped. I still can't see anything through that forest between Stonebridge here and Henry House Hill up there a mile away, and I don't know what this means. The Federals may have rallied at the bottom of the hill. At least it looks that way, and the lull may be the prelude to another attack. We can't tell here. We don't know anything yet. The silence here is ominous. It's difficult to say whether... Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Soldiers are coming down the Warrenton Turnpike in this direction. Yes. Yes, I can see them clearly. They've just turned a bend in the road. They're not more than 50 yards away now. They're Federals. More of them keep coming. And still more. They're walking silently. It's a normal gait, but they seem disorganized. Hundreds of them now coming in one solid column. Many of them have no guns. They keep on coming, eyes straight ahead, faces bloody, black and dusty, and still more keep turning that bend in the road. They're heading in the direction of Cup Run, 2 miles behind us. I'll see if I... Wait, there's an officer on horseback. I'll try to get to him.
Major, what are these men? What does all this mean, sir? Where is General McDonald?
I don't know. To tell you your life, get back to Cub Run. We'll make a stand there.
The Federal Army is in retreat. They're moving across this stone bridge, crossing Bull Run, retreating toward Cub Run, directly in the path of the oncoming divisions on the Warrenton Turnpike. They're going Lee right now. I return you to CBS headquarters at Cut Run.
This is John Bailey on the Warrenton Turnpike. The Northern Spectators here haven't gone forward or back since the sound of the gun stopped their procession. They're uncertain, milling about in confusion. And, of course, they don't know about the defeat of Henry House Hill. However, they've lost some of their earlier confidence, and the uncertainty about what's going on has shaken them. The turnpike is choked with gigs and wagons and horses and carriages, and the women are really frightened, and we can't say that we can blame them. No one knows whether the Union Army will stand and fight when it gets here or continue its retreat. The men here are grim, their faces set, and that goes to the congressmen and senators, too. Here they come. Here come the Federals. They're coming at a trot. Their officers are riding up and down in front of the retreating column with drawn swords. They're shouting at their men, seem to be trying to stop them, but the troops pay no attention. The troops are paying no attention. They just keep on running. It's just a sort of a dog trot, many of them looking back over their shoulders toward the Confederate positions as if they were expecting pursuit. A Federal major right near me here is flailing one of the soldiers with a flat of his sword, calling on him to stand and fight.
What are you afraid of? I'm not afraid of you. I'll show you I'm not afraid of you.
The soldier who was being beaten by the sword has shot the officer. He drew a pistol and fired right at his face. And the oncoming Federal soldiers now have run right into the civilians. It's clear that there's going to be no stand here. The Federals are going back. They're going back, and they're still retreating. They're jogging along the turnpike. They've spilled out over the road, moving out of the cornfields on both sides, both officers and privates alike. One lady has just thrown away her red parasol and picked up her yellow skirts and jumped on the back of a mule behind a Federal soldier. Both of them are whipping their poor mule frantically. The battle of Bull Run is over. The Confederates have won. There's no telling what is going to follow now. The Confederates may be coming right down the Warrenton Turnpike in hot pursuit of these broken, beaten Federal troops. This beaten Federal army. Washington itself may even be in danger. And beyond that, no one can predict what tomorrow's dawn will bring.
July 21st, 1861. The Federal Army is routed, and the dream of a short struggle in the war between the states is shattered by the arms of the South.
You have been listening to the First Battle of Bull Run, another broadcast in the series You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne. The First Battle of Bull Run was written by Makaja Wren and Mr. Cheyenne. Howard Smith played Congressman Ely. Next week,
October 12, 1492, Columbus discovers America. You are there.
All American, that's the new Sunday night lineup of shows on CBS. Following Sam Spade tonight, an original mystery story of John Dixon Carr on Cabin B-13. Then, Henry Fonda stars on the new Electric Theater. Coming up, lots of laughs on Our Miss Brooks with Eve Arden, and still more chuckles on the new half-hour Lum and Abner program. Finally, a carload of cash prizes on the quiz show with a heart, Strike It Rich. Be sure to hear them all this evening over most of these CBS stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.